This is indeed a festive occasion. It happens about once a year. I wish it happened more often than that. I will say, probably only for the only time during the first hour, that my guest tonight is Bill Melberg, who's a great, who's a fine writer, by the way, incidentally, writes a great deal about aerospace issues, but is a great mimic and has been touring the country for years as the various presidents of the United States. And he's going to join us tonight to be all of those people. I think we start with Roosevelt, and you opened with Roosevelt just a little while ago. But give me a little bit more Roosevelt. I am fond of him in terms, in memory. He was our last truly patrician president, wouldn't you say?
I would say you are correct about that, Dr. Rosenberg, although perhaps John Kennedy would fit in that category a little. But actually, I don't do that much. Franklin Roosevelt, yours is better, except I always think of...
Mine is a one-liner.
When I think of Franklin Roosevelt, I think, the sun will come out tomorrow, bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow, from Annie.
You are about the only presidential mimic, there are others around, who does them in song as well as in straight talk.
I think that's probably correct, yes. I love doing parodies.
And you do have, I believe, Barack Obama doing a song for us, which we will unveil later tonight.
We don't have President Obama with a song.
Not yet.
Yes. We'll have President Bush with a song.
Oh, yes, of course. And we'll work that. We'll work towards that. I don't want to do them successively, but still, after Roosevelt came a very plain-spoken and in many ways a plain man, celebrated for his plainness, Harry Truman.
Harry Truman.
Does one do an imitation of Harry Truman?
No. I don't have the piano tonight. usually my colleague Kent Wayman is with me with the piano, and then I would have played he would have played the Missouri Waltz for you. But I really pick up with Lyndon Johnson. That's when I really started getting into impersonating our presidents.
Well, I mean to put some of these presidents, if not on the grill, at least in the inquisitorial seat tonight, and put a question or two to each of them, and certainly to President Johnson. I need
Good
to
evening,
ask...
Milt.
Good evening, sir.
I come here tonight with a heavy heart and my lovely bride, Ladybug. Ladybird.
Why is your heart heavy, sir?
My heart's always heavy, Milt. I'm a big man. Every part of my body is heavy. My ears are big. My heart is heavy. But it's good to be with you tonight, my fellow American.
It's very good to have you here. I do remember, speaking of your ears, you're picking up your dog by its ears.
And both of my dogs are the two beagles, him and her, and I picked them up by their ears. They were fond of that.
Though the reporters who saw you do that, and the picture of it was kind of flashed around the country, that got you a little bit of bad press for a week or so.
Fortunately, PETA was not in existence at that time.
That's true.
Otherwise, I would have been out of office even sooner.
You did leave office in a way that surprised many of us.
I came on the television and I said, I shall not seek, nor shall I accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
It
was not exactly the Roland Burris approach.
No, it was rather the Sherman-esque approach.
Yes.
What did you say, General Sherman? How did that go in history?
If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve.
Yeah. Of course, the question of whether Lyndon actually was still considering running down to virtually the last moment has been closely examined by many presidential historians.
It's always better to leave gracefully than face defeat.
And, of course, he was followed by a man who tried for the presidency. Exactly, and didn't make it the first time around when he ran against John F. Kennedy, but made it the second time around.
With a run for governor of California in between.
Didn't even make that.
If at once, as my Quaker mother told me, you don't succeed, try again.
What were you doing there just
now? I was wiping my upper lip. If you recall, I used to sweat profusely on my upper lip.
You did have a rather liquid upper lip.
Yes, yes.
And there are those who say, as you well know, that in the crucial debate with John F. Kennedy, held right here in the old stable where CBS television was located until only a year or two ago. At McClure Court, that those who only heard it on the radio thought that Nixon did better and gave him the credit for winning that debate. Those who saw it on television gave it hands down to Kennedy because of the appearance of Nixon.
He had more hair. And
less sweat.
And less sweat. He did not sweat profusely on his upper lip. He was cool. And let's face it, I was not cool. I was not a crook either, but I wasn't cool.
Cool is a term that's come up a lot lately. In fact, it came up on this very program just last night.
Oh, really?
With Bernard Goldberg, as we talked about the press's deep affection for, enthusiasm for, perhaps the press's looseness of mind in its excitement over the phenomenon of Barack Obama.
You mean the way they slobber over him?
That was the word Goldberg, uses in his very title. Surely in that connection, the thing about, well, you heard it. Goldberg said there were four different factors that commended Obama to the press and ultimately to the electorate. One, young.
Young.
Two,
cool.
Three, black. Four,
smart.
Liberal.
Yeah. And that's why the press never slobbered over me.
Well, you were.
I wasn't cool.
But I asked him to define cool last night, and he couldn't quite do it. In fact, he invoked the Supreme Court justice saying, I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it.
Well, let's put it this way. During the Nixon administration, we put in a bowling alley. I bowled. They didn't think that was cool. Obama plays basketball.
Uh-huh.
That's cool.
You also changed the uniform of the White House guards.
We tried to make them look a little more like the Praetorian Guard.
Like characters from a Viennese opera.
Oh, yes.
Operetta.
Yeah. Jerry Ford got rid of that.
Jerry Ford. One does remember Jerry Ford.
Good evening, Milt. Oops, sorry, I hit the microphone.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you tonight? Was a bad year for Michigan last fall, wasn't it?
Well, we're both Michigan people, I guess. Or you are.
Yes. Wolverine, class of 35.
And I have one of my college degrees from the University
of Michigan. I know you do, and I'm sure you're still a Wolverine fan.
Actually, I'm more a Yale fan, because that was my first teaching job. And you, sir, also have a Yale association.
Got my law degree from Yale Law School. And we had a wonderful time there, and of course I was an accidental president.
An accidental or an accident prone?
Accidental. I was never elected president or vice president.
That is true.
But I was actually the most gifted athlete among all of our presidents. Just accident prone.
And as a football player, you knew how to take a
fall. I knew how to fall and without getting hurt.
Yeah. Seriously, what are your reflections about the presidency? You did, what, about 2.5 years, or was it 3?
2.5 momentous years. Yeah. And if you think about some of the people I had on my cabinet, Dick Cheney and some of the people who later served President Bush. Donald Rumsfeld, or as I used to call him, Ronald Dumsfeld. Just a joke.
Well, you were always a bit of a jokester.
Yes, absolutely. I wrote a book about presidential humor.
But I was just about to ask you, what were your reflections once you'd been through the 2.5 years in the presidency, and you had a long, long period afterwards in retirement, but still a favored guest at many occasions. You gave many speeches, I know that. What were your final reflections on the challenge of the presidency, the burden of the presidency?
Well, it began my first morning as president making my own toast. And I found out I did not have to do that, that someone else would make my breakfast. So that was one burden I did not have, which I did have as the House Minority Leader. And then, of course, I had to go over and meet Mr. Brezhnev. And if you'll recall, they played the Michigan fight song instead of Hail to the Chief or the national anthem for me. I like that. There were no burdens, Milt. I wore my win button, and everyone wore their win buttons, and it's just unfortunate I didn't win.
So you quite enjoyed yourself.
I did, and I was ready to do it for 4 more years until Ronnie Reagan upset my apple cart.
Well, we need to talk about that, but you know we've neglected one man who was the predecessor of the two presidents that you followed. And before them came that other patrician from Boston. And we've left him out so far, and he must be around here someplace. We shall invoke him directly after we pause for this. And whoever our guest is, he's not being named right now. We may invoke that real name again sometime later tonight. But right now, I'm very eager to talk with a man I much admired during his all-too-brief career as president, John F. Kennedy. Good evening, sir.
Ask not what you can do for your country. Ask what your country can do for you.
Well, my country hasn't done much for me lately.
It's the new approach.
One could interpret the bailout bill and the others.
Ask not what you can do for your country. Ask how your country can bail out you.
Yes. And it occurred to me just the other night that one might borrow a line from Everett Dirksen and update it. A trillion here, a trillion there, and pretty
Before
soon we're talking
know,
about we're real money.
We're talking real money.
There's Mr. Dirksen himself. Let me hear it in the Dirksen voice.
A trillion here, a trillion there. Before you know it, we're talking real money.
We are indeed. We are indeed. But as you look at what's happening in the country right now, Mr. President, does it strike you that, are there any surprises as you examine our current situation, our current dilemma?
I cut taxes when I was president to help stimulate the economy.
Yes, you did.
I'm surprised you're not doing that now.
If it were in my power, I might perhaps do that.
We choose to go to the moon. Oh, wait a minute, that's another speech. But no, I'm just surprised at how things have changed. And what's considered liberal today is not what was considered liberal when I was president in the early 60s.
It's curious, as you are talking with me, that I am reminded that all three of the Kennedy brothers who were public figures had essentially the same voice, with slight variations.
Well, Teddy, of course, is just a little bit deeper than his brother John. And he's actually, we don't want to make fun of or poke fun at Senator Kennedy right now because, of course, he's in poor health. So we won't poke fun at him.
And just the other night, I happened to meet, I think, the youngest son of Bobby Kennedy.
And Bobby was even a little higher than his brother John, but he was very sad when he talked. You know, so you're right. They do sound alike, the three of them.
Yeah,
it's that whole Boston thing.
As you look at all the presidents we've known, all the presidents who've been with us in the era of radio and sound recording and so on, and then, of course, on into television, were there any two who had essentially the same voice?
Well, I think they're all different because I have to think in different terms to do all of them.
A mimic I used to know once told me that you find quite similarities between famous voices. And one real combo that struck me as bizarre, but he was right, when you actually listened to the two voices or listened to him do them, were George McGovern, Senator McGovern, and Liberace, the pianist.
I believe I was the one who mentioned that.
Were you the one who told me that
yes.
first? I thought it was Don Kennedy who told me that.
Well, no, we had Senator George McGovern, and after he lost the election in 1972, he started singing, "I'll be seeing you in all those old familiar places." Liberace. And, of course, actually...
Are there other such convergences?
There are. Zach has one of them, and I forget which one he has, but it's. I'll give you the numbers, Zach. It's number 23.
We will hear
which it. Which president does this sound like?
Let's get it up right away. 23 coming up. One, two, three.
No. I'll give you a clue. Well, it's Fred Rogers we're going to hear.
Yeah.
From Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And if you picture George H.W. Bush, number 41.
Oh, yes.
Wearing a sweater and sneakers, they sound very much alike.
Here it is.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? could you be mine?
Well, that surely sounds like Fred Rogers.
Can you say economic stimulus package? Can you say parachute jumping? So I think there's a definite connection.
No, but I can say read my lips.
No new taxes.
Uh-huh.
Please don't pass the sushi, if you'll recall that dinner in Japan.
The barf dinner.
Yeah. All over the prime minister.
Well, since we've landed back in Texas again with another Texan president, of course he wasn't native-born Texan, his son is, but let's talk about the first President Bush. Well, let's talk rather with the first President Bush.
Great to be here, Milt. Oh, don't want to hyperventilate. First question, go right ahead.
Well, my first question is, you got defeated in your second run for the presidency. Your son, who had a hard time of the presidency, managed two terms. Is that a matter of rivalry between you even now?
No, but I don't understand it. Don't understand it at all. I was a lot more popular than W. And for some reason, I don't know, we had this young, cool guy, Bill Clinton, come along, and he beat me with cool. I guess that's all I can say about it. He beat me with the cool factor. And, of course, the economy wasn't so cool at the time of that election. And that whole Perot guy got in there, and that all that crazy talk, you know, about, hey, read my lips, I mean, listen to, look at my charts here. He was crazy, crazy, and that hurt me too.
You know you're talking now about a former WGN colleague.
He's going to be right here, wasn't he? Going to do that whole, going to do show from this studio.
No, he
going to buy the studio.
He bought time when he mounted his presidential candidacy, and he was on WGN radio and supposedly syndicated from here at his cost and through his negotiation for a once-a-week, one-hour presentation, which he did for 3 or 4 months before he got tired of it.
Well, see, the problem was we couldn't show people charts over the radio.
That's right.
And you have to have charts in order to put across my messages. Follow me? See what I'm saying? Oh, I tell you, it's just crazy out there, Mill. It's crazy. I told you, giant sucking sand. What have we had? Giant sucking sand. All our jobs being sucked overseas. I said that in 1992, and it's come to pass.
Well, how do
you... By the way, it's a world-class program you have here.
Thank you, sir. What do you make of what has come to pass only in the last half year?
It's crazy, but I predicted it. I said, giant sucking sand. I had the charts to back it up.
Well, you think it's NAFTA that has got us into this mess?
This whole NAFTA thing, that was sad. That was just sad. That was Chart 24, by the way. I had the whole NAFTA thing laid out on Chart 24. That was my third show.
How you doing these days?
Well, you haven't seen much of me, have you?
No. I think about you sometimes. It must have been disappointing for you never to have got to the presidency. You spent probably a few billion dollars on it.
I came dangerously close. I would have had to give up all my business affairs if I had won. So I came dangerously close. I made a point, though. I think I made my points. Don't you think?
Well, you left an indelible impression, I would
Absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely. Indelible is the word for it. And wasn't I right when it comes right down to it? Didn't I say we're getting rid of all our manufacturing base, we're sending all of our jobs overseas? It was sad then, and it's even sadder now.
Well, perhaps this is then the occasion for you to re-enter American public life.
I'm not cool.
No, you're hot. Or at least you fizzle.
Now that's world class. That's world class. Milt, you are world class, no doubt about it.
By the way, what is cool? I talked about it last night with Bernard Goldberg. We agreed that our new president is cool, and that has served him well, as a few other factors have served him well. You said earlier that Kennedy was cool.
He was cool, but he didn't use charts. But he had hair. See, I had this terrible crew cut. That wasn't cool. Bushy hair like Kennedy, that was cool. Just like Blagojevich. Blagojevich, your former governor.
I know who you're talking about. But I would ask you now, in the identity, not of one of the presidents, but one of the political commentators that we've grown used to over the years, to explain presidential cool to me.
Which one?
Your choice, sir.
Hello, I'm Andy Rooney. Have you ever wondered what's cool?
I have.
I wish I knew myself. People have asked me, Andy, how long have you been doing that program, the little commentary on 60 Minutes? Well, about 105 years, to be exact.
But I'm still not cool, and I don't know what cool is. I just know that I'm not cool, I'm Andy Rooney.
Perhaps Howard Cosell would know.
Hello again, everyone. This is Howard Cosell speaking of sports. And speaking of sports, we have one cool athlete with us here, Muhammad Ali, heavyweight champion of the world. Champ, what's cool? Howard, you are not cool. Thank you, champ. Back to you.
And on to the newsroom, where it is not at the moment
cool.
H.V. Kaltenborn, but rather Roger Badish who will give us the update. It is a signal honor to, I think, preside over the first appearance on Chicago radio since his inauguration of the President of the United States. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Milt. And let me say how delighted I am to be on your program tonight. And just a second. My teleprompter's not working. Well, we'll wing it. We'll wing it without the teleprompter.
Yes, sir.
Milt, before we say anything else, I have brought a small gift for you, and you probably don't even remember this, but last fall, I think it was one or two programs you had probably in September, a handful of my supporters called and emailed WGN and basically wanted you fired. But it was
I don't think they wanted me fired. They were critical of the fact that we had on the program a guest whom they characterized.
Don't even mention it. We don't want the calls again.
Yes, sir.
Don't even mention it.
All right.
But this is a peace offering, Milt, which I hope will, in some small way, take care of that little incident.
A beautiful package.
A handful of my supporters.
A beautiful package, and it is wrapped in a reproduction of the presidential seal. The seal of the United States.
Presidential paper, and I hope you can find a place for this.
Goodness. Well, I'm opening it directly. I'm truly surprised.
Somewhere in your home
and
office.
And, of course, delighted. And there it is.
Picture of me.
So it is.
So
it's framed.
You put that in your home.
Barack Obama, 44th President of the United States of America, it says. And there you are in at least two sort of blended poses with the presidential seal just behind you.
So hopefully that makes up for...
Oh, this will have an honored place directly over my desk in the office here at WGN.
Great. Well, now, Milt, as you know, during the past few weeks, I have been traveling across America, meeting with the American people, and to borrow a phrase, feeling their pain. So I was pleased this
week... Where did you borrow that phrase from, sir?
I don't recall offhand. But his wife works for me. That's why I was so pleased by the passage of my economic stimulus package. And look, we're going to put those unemployed motorhome builders in Indiana back to work, building bridges. We're going to put those unemployed real estate agents in Arizona back to work, saving spotted owls. We're going to put the unemployed factory workers in Peoria back to work, stopping global warming. Now, you ask, how are we going to do all that?
I was about to ask that, actually, yes.
Three words. Spend, spend, spend. And I want to thank once again the hard-working American taxpayers who have forked over the $787 billion to pay for this package, because let's face it, Dr. Rosenberg, without capitalism, socialism would never work. So we're very happy.
Of course, you have a rich knowledge of American history and surely a presidential history. And when you say spend, 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 you must have had in mind the famous moment when they asked Harry Hopkins, who was really the top adjutant of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, what the secret was of Roosevelt's political success, getting elected for the second time and then for the third time. And he went on even for the fourth time. And Harry Hopkins' famous answer was tax, tax, tax. Spend, 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 elect, elect, elect.
I left out the other two words, but that, of course, is our motto.
Do you think it's going to work that way for you?
It worked for Roosevelt, and it'll work again. The New Deal. Milt, I know many Americans tonight have many questions about tomorrow. For example, can we resuscitate the economy? Yes, we can. Can we stimulate the stock market? Yes, we can. Can we energize the automotive industry? Yes, we can. Can we turn swords into plowshares, stop the seas from rising, and cure the common cold? Yes, we can. Can we remove ring around the collar, put the toothpaste back in the tube, and kill bugs dead?
Yes, we can. I see.
Can we cross our T's, dot our I's, and put round pegs in square holes? Yes, we can. Can we pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and get America moving forward again? Yes, we can. Can we get the Chicago Cubs to win this year's World Series?
No.
We can't. Some things even a messiah cannot do.
You are indeed finally realistic, aren't you?
There are some things we have to face head on, and that's one of them.
Well, tell me.
But I am faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, and able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Is tonight, is this very day the 20th?
1 month.
This is exactly 1 month since your inauguration.
It's been a great month.
Well, I meant to ask you about that and ask you to elaborate, adumbrate, in fact, on your experience over the last 30 days.
Well, in the last few days, some people have started to suggest that I'm in over my head and that we don't know what we're doing. But I have an answer to them.
And that answer is?
It's Bush's fault. We inherited the mess. So that could be our message in the next 30 days.
Well, how long will
but
it
we
be?
Hope not to, we
how
hope,
long will it be Bush's fault?
Until we get the Obama recovery fully in operation.
When is that scheduled for, exactly?
We don't know. First, I need to find a cabinet. People who pay their taxes.
Aren't all the positions filled by now?
Not quite. We still have to find people who pay their taxes.
Well, you've had no difficulty alone.
No, not at all. Nor Michelle. But by the way, speaking of Michelle, I want you to know that your program is what we listen to every night when we go to bed in the White House.
I would like to believe that, sir, but...
We listen over the Internet.
Well, I know it does reach Washington over the Internet. But I imagine you've got other things to do.
No, we listen to you. David Axelrod is one of your biggest fans, and I am too ever since I was with you a few years ago.
Well, yes, and as you began your public career, you did appear on this program.
I'll never forget what you said that night.
What was that?
Senator. I was state senator at the time.
No, you weren't. You were running.
I'm running.
For state senator.
Well, we assumed I would be. Mr. Obama, you are cool.
Well, I'm very perspicacious on these matters, of course.
Indeed you are.
And we will look forward to more conversation with you, sir. In the second hour, we're going to be inviting our audience to call in and put a question to any particular American president, from Franklin Delano Roosevelt on to the present moment. You, dialing 591-7200, simply have to tell us when you talk to Zach, our producer, what president you want to talk to and what you want to ask him, and we'll probably put you through and allow you that presidential interrogation. And that will begin shortly after the newscast, which comes at 10 o'clock. But we'll go on right now chatting about matters presidential and matters regarding even other public figures who aren't presidents but earn more money than some of those presidents when we continue right after these words. And we return to these various presidents, and dare I mention again the name of the man who is all of those presidents? Sure, I dare. He's a good old friend and a man whose work I've always admired and whose company I've always much enjoyed off the air as well as on the air, Bill Melberg. You do this around the country for all sorts of groups, and you had one or two command performances in the White House, didn't you?
Well, you've been there too, of course.
Recently, yeah. Wasn't imitating anybody.
Mine were during the Reagan years.
Yeah.
And I did several staff parties at the White House, and of course, pretty nervous the first time I met
the president and Mrs. Reagan.
Did Reagan watch you do it?
Yes. Yeah. And he came up to me and put his arm around me and said, "Well, if it isn't Ronald Reagan, I feel as though I've known you my whole life." And that put me at ease almost instantly. And he had that ability to put people, because he, of course, knew the people were nervous, and he knew how to put them at ease with a joke or a smile.
Well, it's time to talk with President Reagan.
Well, actually, this is, of course, President's Month. We just had President's Day.
Yes.
And this month was President Reagan's birthday on the 6th. And I thought we could have him tell his life story, which, if Zach is ready, his life story is number 7.
We're getting it up.
Hello, this is Ronald Reagan, and I'd like to give you a brief summary of my life story. And since most stories begin at the beginning, well, we might as well start out with my childhood. Back in Dixon, Illinois, when I was a little boy, I wondered and pondered, what shall I be? A farmer, a doctor, then a teacher said to me, "An actor is the job for you. That's what I think you should do." That's what I was thinking too. California, here I come. Making movies sure was fun. Kicking footballs, shooting guns. Newt Rockne, Kings Row, and Santa Fe Trail. Pat O'Brien, Robert Cummings, Errol Flynn, the leading males. But then I thought, oh golly gee, President's the role for me. My trail led east back to D.C. Watch out, White House, here I come. 8 great years is what I had. White House living wasn't bad. The dinners, the parties, the summits too, with Margaret Thatcher, Gorbachev, and Pope John Paul, to name a few. The White House was the place for me. I loved making history. That's my story in brief. You see, what a movie it would be.
Your accompanist works in Hooray for Hollywood at the end.
Yes.
A quotation.
Always tries to have a little nice tag there.
Say a word about him.
Kent Wayman. Kent and I have actually known each other since high school. And it was.
And Kent has been with you at times here on this
program.
Yes,
and he was unavailable tonight, unfortunately, but although we just heard him. A high school drama teacher heard that I did impressions at my lunch table, and his name was Don Martello. And so he called me down to his office and said, "You're going to be in our variety show. You're going to MC it as Ed Sullivan." And I said, I couldn't do anything like that. I'm scared to death of audiences. I'm introverted. I'm afraid to speak in front of people. He said, "Well, you're going to do it, and you're going to do fine." And he said, "I'm going to pair you up with a funny kid that plays the piano." And I said, "Well, what on earth would I do with a kid that plays piano?" And that was 40 years ago, and we travel the country together, having a fun time wherever we go. Last year, we, incidentally, I should add, Kent is a really, really fine pianist. He has 2 master's degrees in percussion from University of Iowa. And last year he accompanied Yo-Yo Ma for a performance here in Chicago.
I did not know about that, really.
And Yo-Yo Ma sent him a beautifully inscribed picture. And I said, I guess after working with Yo-Yo Ma, working with me is pretty big letdown. So, but we had a great...
I'd say it's a contrast.
It is a contrast indeed. But we had a great time last year in some interesting places where Kent often gets the laughs because he is a very funny fellow. And I'll mention one incident. We were in Memphis, and actually we had 2 programs, 2 nights in a row. So on the second day, we had to kill a little time. So we went to Graceland. You're familiar with Graceland.
I know it exists. I've never been able to get in there.
It's Elvis's home.
Yeah.
So
We were on this little bus that actually takes you from, like, the parking area to the house. And, yeah, all these people, everyone else on the bus, they're really devout Elvis fans. I mean, you know, they worship the guy. And Kent sits down and he says, "Ooh, I'm all shook up." And I thought it was very funny, but he got a lot of dirty looks from the other people seated around us.
What is an Elvis fan? Are they called Elvisards or Elvisoids or what?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know.
I think Elvisard.
But it was a very, very interesting tour, and we thoroughly enjoyed it and really had forgotten just how many hits Elvis had. Mm-hmm. And I do a little Elvis in the act.
Let me hear you, as Elvis, introduce the only recently superseded president of the United States.
I really only sing Elvis.
Well, you could sing the intro.
Hello, George W. Bush, here is.
Good evening, sir.
Hey, howdy, man. How you doing? Good to see you again.
It's a great pleasure.
I had the honor and pleasure of meeting you in the White House a couple of months ago.
It was a great delight for me and my family. Yes.
Presenting you with the National Endowment for the Humanities Medal.
Yes, you did, sir.
And my thought was, based on that experience you had in September, those two programs, if you're going to get the medal, I'd better give it to you. So we did.
I thought you handled it all with considerable grace. You, of course, gave the medal to 8 or 9 recipients of the National Endowment for the Humanities Medal, and then you also looped the medal around the necks of the 9 or 10 winners of the National Endowment for the Arts Medal.
And just to make one thing clear, each of the recipients received their own medal.
Oh, yes.
So,
oh,
I mean,
yes.
We weren't, you sort of suggested we were just handing it around.
No, you gave each of us the medal.
Each recipient got their own.
I've got it. Yeah, I thought of wearing it tonight.
Right, it looks beautiful.
Yeah. Of course, the recipient, or what was that word?
Recipitidian.
The recipitidian, who was most fascinating to me and to my little granddaughter, Ava, was an actress I used to love. I could still say that I love her. She's now rather rich in years. She's 92 years old. But there she was, receiving the Humanities Medal, rather the Arts Medal, from you, sir, and that was the woman who played Melanie in Gone with the Wind.
I can't place her right now.
Olivia de Havilland, don't you remember?
Olivia de Havilland, who was a sister of Joan Fontaine.
Quite so.
And not only that, if you're familiar with aviation, and as you know, I was an F-102 supersonic fighter.
The de Havilland plane is coming up here.
De Havilland aircraft. Sir Jeffrey de Havilland was her cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia's cousin.
My friend Bill Melberg is a specialist on things of that sort. When he's not doing presidential mimicry,
I know.
He writes lots of articles about the history of aviation.
And space and
space exploration.
And that sort of thing. But Laura and I were just delighted to have you there at the White House.
But now you've left. What are your memories, bittersweet, or are you just relieved?
I stepped on board the helicopter Marine One, and after the inauguration, and I shouted out to President Obama one last thing. Your problems now, baby. I went home, and well, let me tell you. Let me put it to you this way. Oh, now I'm back home, where the Texans all roam, and the Cowboys and Rangers both play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, 'cause my critics are now far away. I'm home, home on my ranch, and I couldn't care less about France. My problems are none, I'm just having some fun, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Wrote that on my own.
You and your father must sit around often discussing
The library.
The library.
Yeah.
But you also are trading notes, surely, on the art of being president.
Well, basically, as you mentioned earlier, I won twice. He didn't.
Yeah.
So we got, when my brother Jeb runs, we hope to get that full 12 years. Well, we got the 12. The whole What am I looking for? 16 years or even 20.
Well, that sounds like 20 to me. But, that would be aspiration.
Jeb's going to wait maybe 4 years or eight before he runs and change his last name.
Ah, to what?
Anything but Bush. like I say, we're just laying low at the ranch.
Well, what advice, apart from that shouted last word, what advice did you give or will you be giving in the future? Because you'll be making occasional visits to the White House, surely, as all former presidents do. What advice do you have for the new president?
I told him, I said, if you have any questions about how things operate or how things run, call Bill Clinton.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, interestingly, Bill Clinton hasn't yet visited with us tonight.
He's with my dad, and if you want to get my dad, he's sort of adopted him. You can talk to Bill.
Let's have them both in.
Son, come on in. Here's my adopted son, Bill Clinton. Hi, Milt. How are you? Great to be back with you again.
I see you haven't lost your insouciance, sir.
I hope not. I mean, that'll be the day when I lose my But I'm just so proud of my Hillary. She's doing a fantastic
the
job.
The Secretary of State.
I almost said fantastical. I've been hanging out with the Bushes.
I suppose this evening, where is she tonight? In Tokyo or
China?
She's
Beijing,
in China. Yes.
And she was in Korea. And yeah. She's been in Japan. See, when she asked me about what to do, should she stay in the Senate or should she take the Secretary of State job, I called up Madeleine Albright, who was my Secretary of State, and she said, you know, on average, I was out of the country 208 days a year. I said, Hillary, take the Secretary's job. I'll watch things on the home front.
I see. It all begins to fall into place now. We'll come back to you, sir, and to yet other presidents and some of our listeners after the update on the news. My guest is, of course, Bill Melberg, great presidential mimic, though he does lots of other voices as well, as will shortly appear. But right now, we do want to invite telephone calls. We're going to get to the phones in about 10 or 12 minutes. Here's the basic concept. A call and ask for a president, any one of the ones we've talked about, any president since and including Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and address a question to that president. Or if you want to get two presidents responding to the same question, you're allowed a quota of two at least, but no more than two.
Or a mayor.
Or a mayor.
Or a famous vice president or senator or governor.
Well, there you are. That's a very, very broad field. But to do that, you've got to dial us up very quickly. 591-7200, the number, of course. 312, the area code, then 591-7200. If you're one of our Australian or Malaysian or Chinese listeners catching us on the Internet at midday tomorrow and you want to issue the same challenge, you could do that via email. The email address is extension720@tribune.com. Extension720, as one word, at Tribune, TRIBUNE.com. Or the aforementioned 591-7200. Get your calls in and your emails in quickly, and we'll get to your favorite president shortly. But first, I've got an assignment. There are lots of other people around who haven't quite been president, but have had such aspirations, most of them, or some of them at least, and all of them political figures. I want to sit them down and hear what light they can shed, what explanation they can somehow offer us about the nature of our present financial dilemma and the way out of it. And thus I invite the following four distinguished Americans to sit down at the table right now. John McCain, Al Gore, Congressman Barney Frank, and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Gentlemen.
I start out because as the governor, I'm the sitting governor of California. I don't know if maybe Vice President Gore would outrank me, but he's the former and a loser. I'm the winner. Go right ahead. Protocol would have me go first, but since you've already started, Arnold, why don't you finish and then we'll move on to more important things. Well, I just wanted to say, guten Abend, Damen und Herren, wie geht es Ihnen? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How you all doing? It's great to be here. Of course, in California, we had the problem with the deficit, and we needed to have the budget. And I told the people in the legislature, if we don't get with the budget settled, we're going to start laying off all the state workers, 22,000 of them up to that number. And I was serious about it. So we got through with the, you know, with that kind of pressure that I put on, the pressure. I learned that as a bodybuilder, you know, you put the pressure points on there, and they caved. And so this week we got the budget approval. Now we're going to have happy ending in California.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that bit of wisdom. This is Al Gore, and I just want to tell everyone listening that all of our problems are the result of global warming. Now, I know what some of you are saying. Tonight, as I speak, it's very, very cold in the upper Midwest. Another snowstorm is headed our way here in Chicago, up to 8 inches. January and December were absolutely record setters for snow and ice and cold. But I want you to remember, without global warming, we would not have global cooling. It is the warmth that leads to the cold. So when you go out and say that Al Gore is nuts, it's really, really cold outside, I thought he said, well, believe me, it has to be warm for it to be cold. And if you buy my book, you'll see that. Now, I don't think there's anything else to be said, but I know we want to have work in Senator McCain and Congressman Barney Frank.
Thank you very much, my friend. Milt, my friend, great to see you. This is John McCain, and I want to say hello to all of my friends in our listening audience, and they are my friends, my friend. My friend, we would have had a very different program here tonight if the election had turned out just a little differently. My friends, despite what the liberal media tells you, it was a very, very close election, and Governor Palin and I came very close to winning. If I had won just a handful of more states, Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Colorado, New Mexico, New Hampshire, and just one more, I would have been sitting here tonight as the president, my friends, and that is the fact. Now, I don't know what I voted against the economic stimulus package because, my friends, I think it was full of pork. But Congressman Frank knows more about this. He's chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, so I'll give him an opportunity to speak right now. Congressman?
Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you very much, Governor, Mr. Vice President Gore. It's an honor and pleasure for me to be here with all of you tonight speaking about our economic bailout package. I know many people say, Congressman Frank, Bonnie, what can you possibly know about economics? I mean, what background do you have in banking or financial services committee other than being chairman of the committee? Well, let me tell you, when I was 6 years old, my parents took me over to the bank and signed me up for the Christmas fund. And we were Jewish. We didn't even celebrate Christmas. But that's what I learned about banking as a little boy. And I still know about banking today and about financial services. And I want to assure the American people that as long as I'm chairman of this committee, there's nothing to worry about because we're going to rescue, I tell you, the American economy if it's the right thing I do.
Well, that certainly makes me feel rest assured, let me tell you. I think the guy is nuts. What are you talking about, this, you know, the Christmas fund? That's crazy. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, my friends, let's reach out a hand of bipartisanship and try to all get together here.
I note that a friend of all of you has just entered the room. We might ask him for a final word, perhaps for a blessing, before we break up this meeting. I have in mind Senator Joseph Lieberman.
Thank you so much, Milt, for inviting me. God bless you for asking. And it's just a real blessing to be here. I'm the only person in this room who truly is bipartisan.
You are indeed, sir, and I thank you very much
God bless you.
And God bless you as well. Indeed, the God of Moses be at your right hand.
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov. Ashe lub dankach. And we are going to pause in just a moment for the usual reasons, and then on to the phones and the email. So once again, the invitation. Any president you want to get to pose a question, to offer a thought, to engage in some continuing dialogue, we welcome your contribution. Give us a call at 591-7200. Do it right now, because we want to go directly to the interaction between you and one or another president of the United States. 312, then 591-7200. Or for email, extension 720 at tribune.com. On to your questions for the president, any president, from Franklin D. Roosevelt down to the present moment, after we pause for this. And we are going to go directly to whatever president you choose, your president of choice, on 591-7200. 591-7200, 312, the area code, if you're calling long distance. And we go first to Chris in Naperville. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. You mentioned there are some senators available. Is there a Secretary of State available who's the runner-up to the runner-up of the presidency?
Just her husband. But he'd be happy to answer any question and pass it on to her.
Well, is she just in some type of holding pattern for 2016, or is she just kind of giving up?
That's a good question.
Well, see, we talked about that when she was offered the job of Secretary of State. I said, honey, you could be Senate Majority Leader if you stay in the Senate, because Harry Reid has been criticized even by Democrats. You could take that Senate Majority Leader job and you'd be in the news all the time. On the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, Madeleine Albright told me the Secretary of State is out of the country 208 days a year. And I said, you know, that would give you an awful lot of travel. You love to travel. You'd be in the headlines and the news all the time in all those other countries. And don't worry about things back here at home. I'll take care of them while you're away. So that's why how we made that decision. And it's working out just great for me.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Chris.
We thank you, sir, for the call. And coming up for seeking another president, on 591-7200 is Judy over in Park Ridge. Good evening.
Yeah, hi. I would like to speak actually to President Clinton tonight, if I could.
Well, he's here, isn't he?
Hi, Judy.
Well, I'll tell you, I wanted to speak with you, Mr. Clinton, to tell you about another fellow by the name of Bill. And his name is Bill Melberg, and he is probably one of the neatest people I have ever met in my life. I grew up with him. I went to Maine South High School with him.
Well, you know who else went
there? If you remember Bill.
You know who else went to Maine South?
I certainly do. Your wife, Hillary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Judy, let me ask you this.
Yes?
Hillary's talked about you often. I think you're an artist, right?
You're absolutely right, Mr. Clinton, Bill.
Yeah, you like to paint horses, don't you?
You're absolutely right. And didn't we many
We have a lot of horses in Washington, you know.
Yeah,
usually you see them from the rear, though.
Yeah, right, exactly. And many a time I met that fabulous guy, Bill Melberg, at the Kinko's about 1 o'clock in the morning. And he would entertain me until about 3 o'clock in the morning and keep me in stitches over there in Park Ridge.
Well, he's a funny guy, especially that hour.
Yes, he is. And I just want to say that he is absolutely as charming and sweet in real life as he is when he's playing the president on the radio.
Milt can tell you I've turned 8 shades of red right now.
Yeah. And you know what? Also, Mr. Martello was my drama teacher, too, at Maine South. And you brought back wonderful memories to me tonight.
He was a treasure, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And coming out of character, Bill, it's wonderful to hear you tonight. And I love you, kid.
Well, thank you, Judy. Keep up the good work.
See you at Colonial Coffee Shop.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Thank you.
Rosenberg, thanks for having Bill on.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
Sounds like a delightful woman.
Absolutely.
Nice woman to spend a few hours with in the early morning at Kinko's.
Yeah, well, they don't have those late hours there anymore. But I would be copying scripts, and Judy was copying some of her paintings. And she actually paints horses for horse owners, you know, racing horses and so on. And she also paints an American Indians, a wonderful artist.
Now, I've got a question for you by email here, and this is for Lyndon Johnson. Mr. President, do you ever have a desire to grab the current president by the ears until he yelps?
That, my friend, is an excellent question, because President Obama has very large ears. And if you remember, he doesn't want us to talk about them. And since we don't want to have a reoccurrence of what happened on this very program last September, let's not say anything else about President Obama's very large ears. I had very large ears, too.
What do you have to say about some of the other presidents that followed you?
Mean me, LBJ?
Yes, sir.
Well, I didn't like the one who followed me. I thought it was going to be Hubert.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Tricky Dick, Nixon.
Oh, I remember him well.
I wanted to be Humphrey. You remember Senator Humphrey, Vice President Humphrey.
Yes, I do indeed.
I'm just as pleased as punch to be here, by golly. Politics of joy.
Hubert was great. Actually, I remember Senator Humphrey, because he went back to the Senate after the vice presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at the airport in Minneapolis one evening, snowy evening, the same time I was, and his flight was canceled. And he asked if he could go on board some of the planes that were waiting because of the weather conditions, stuck at the gate, and just say hello to the folks and make them feel at home. So the ultimate consummate campaigner. He even at the airport, he was going on board airplanes to say hello to people.
You know, if you don't mind, I'm going to indulge myself a little bit and share a serious anecdote with you, or at least it was something that touched me a great deal. Years and years ago, I interviewed Humphrey. Not here in studio, but I went over to the Council on Foreign Relations where he was spending the afternoon, and we had set this up, and I brought along an engineer. We taped him and played it. This was after his first run, his failed run in 68. Indeed, I didn't start doing this till 72. It may have well been in 72 when he still had some aspirations, perhaps, or at least was, he didn't enter again, but he may have been thinking about it.
And back in the Senate, as I recall.
To get back into the Senate, yes, which he did do, of course. But I think he may have had some presidential aspirations left over. At any rate, I interviewed him, running towards the end, and I didn't know much about interviewing in those days, sort of running out of political things to talk about. And so I fell back on, I suppose, being a psychologist, and I said, Mr. Vice President, who are your good friends? And all of the easy loquacity and all the high manic intensity that the man had, in which you caught in your imitation of him, suddenly disappeared. And he was almost speechless. And it's as if I had caught him in something. And he fumbled and stuttered and said, Judge Miles Lord in Minneapolis, I've known him for many years. We were in school together. And that was what all he could come up with. And I had this horrible sense that maybe what you got there is the loneliness of the long-distance politician.
He didn't mention Muriel, his wife?
He mentioned nobody, but that name has stuck with me.
Not even Fritz Mondale, by golly.
The name Judge Miles Lord has stuck with me all those years, whoever he may have been.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not Judge Crater.
No. You got a sense that the man
was lonely at the top.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that may be true for many of them.
I think so, too. Although we've heard people talk about Ronald Reagan, that he really didn't have very many close friends. You know, he knew a lot of people, but no one who really knew him very closely.
We've even had the terrible story, I encountered it more than once, that he couldn't necessarily recognize his adopted son.
I think it's a true story, but I think there's a legitimate reason for that.
That being what?
They were putting on a school play or something. He was dressed up like Columbus. I don't know.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's something innocent then, after all.
I hope.
I'm glad to hear it. Back to the phones, 591-7200 and to Darlene in Valparaiso, Indiana. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I was interested in President Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I
yes.
was wondering, how would you assist President Obama in, how would you help him with all the economic situations that we have today, and using some of the ones that you implemented, that you revived our country from the Depression?
So, Darlene, this is Darlene. I thought she was going to ask Al Gore, how do we get rid of snow in Valparaiso?
Now, that would have been no
because
doubt, global warming.
You did have quite a bit of snow, didn't you, recently?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and we're expecting to have more tonight.
Oh. Back to Franklin Roosevelt, though.
Yes.
I've suggested to President Obama that he start eating alphabet soup. And from the alphabet soup, start coming up with various agencies like the WPA and so forth. I hope that answers your question, my dear. And he should buy a dog named Fella.
And that would solve it all.
Which brings up Milt's very famous Franklin Roosevelt impression.
Are we going to do that?
Absolutely.
You are the reporter. I'm down in Florida fishing. And you ask me?
Mr. President, are they biting?
Well, if they are, they're biting one another. That's as far as I can go with it, as you know.
Well, as Bill Clinton would say, thank you so much for calling, darling. I mean, Darlene.
You are so welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks very much, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you indeed. And let's go quickly to another, this being Bill in Oak Brook. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if Dick Cheney, what he thinks about President Obama closing Gitmo.
Well, I somewhat resemble Dick Cheney, but I don't actually do Dick Cheney, so I guess I can't answer that question.
Oh. Well, answer it in somebody else's voice.
Well, let's see.
Who else is relevant to that question?
Mayor Daley.
Yes, indeed.
Why should we, we need to close down Gitmo and bring those people to the Cook County Jail where they can be watched over properly. Which brings me to, of course, we have crowded conditions in our Illinois prisons. They're full of elected officials, but it's kooky. It's kooky. It's kooky. And Olympics.
Sounds good. I'm satisfied. Good answer.
With a response to that, Bill, here is Len O'Connor.
Once again, His Honor the Mayor has spoken. What he has said, no one is quite sure of, but whatever he plans to do, you can be sure of this much, and that is that he will tell us about it after it's been done. That's his right, just as it was Caesar's, and I am Len O'Connor.
You are indeed. You are indeed. Also in your repertoire is another fellow who was heard on WGN as a news commentator.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news.
There is actually one line open at the moment, 591-7200, 312, the area code, for any question to any president. 591, not including Millard Fillmore. We're agreed it's Roosevelt and beyond.
Warren G. Harding.
Yeah. I wonder
Calvin Coolidge.
Well, we do have recordings of those fellows, don't we?
It was Calvin Coolidge who said, and this is an actual quote, that when many people are out of work, the result is unemployment. So I'm sure he would have inspired the American people today.
He was one of the deeper fellows.
His insight, yes.
Yeah. But I've always loved the anecdote about the woman who comes up and says, people bet me that I can't get you to say three words. I'm sure I can.
You lose.
Yeah. 591-7200. Let's go back to the phones and to Kyle in Kankakee. Kyle of Kankakee, rather alliterative that. Good evening.
Thank you, sir. I've been a long-time listener of your program. My question is for the President Nixon.
Kyle.
Thank you.
I love Kankakee County. Carried it in 68 and 72.
Yes. It's actually about the original election. I remember a high school history teacher telling me that in that tense campaign against Kennedy, which you unfortunately lost.
Very unfortunate.
That you developed an almost deep-seated, intense hatred for Kennedy after that election. Is that really the case?
No, just for the first ward of Chicago. They're the ones who carried him over the top. But I still love Kankakee County. By the way, you know whose home Kankakee is, besides Kyle's?
Is it George Ryan?
Yes, yes.
Who was a pharmacist, isn't that correct, Kyle?
Yeah, he was, and then as far as I know, he served in county government and worked his way up, and
Speaker of the House, and
history is.
I wonder if he would have any advice to give to the recently displaced governor of the state of Illinois.
This is former Governor George Ryan, and I know the first thought that came to my mind when I heard about Governor Blagojevich's arrest was, well, there goes my pardon. But if I had any advice for Rod, it would be this. Bring warm socks and sign up for the license plate line that beats the latrine duty.
Very wise.
Little advice there from one governor to another.
Mm-hmm. Wise and practical. 591-7200 is where you reach us. And Anne, right here in Chicago, has done so. Good evening.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am.
I have kind of a buzzkill question here for President Obama.
Yes, sir. Yes, we can.
I know that you were a lecturer at the University of Chicago in constitutional law, and so that you must appreciate the importance of the First Amendment. So could you tell me, please, why you allowed your campaign people to call in to a local Chicago radio station last summer and try to shut it down just because they had a critic on of yours?
Ann.
Yeah.
We discussed this earlier this evening. And I presented Milt with a small gift as a peace offering.
How do you feel about that, Milt?
Oh, I'm quite delighted.
He already has a hump.
Remember, I'm also talking with a former colleague at the University of Chicago.
But, Ann, we really don't want to say much more about it because we don't want to flood the phone lines with more of those people tonight.
Ah, good point. Let those sleeping dogs lie.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, yes we can.
Yes, we can what, exactly?
Everything.
Well, that's really quite upbeat.
Yes, we can. Well, I wish he still had that upbeat, yes, we, you know, I mean, he's been gloom and doom the last couple of weeks. We're headed to catastrophe. Please, Mr. President, we're headed to hope and audacity, and yes, we can. So we need more of the yes, we can.
We have to kind of restoke the bubbling fountain of optimism.
We need to resuscitate the economy, rekindle the automotive industry, and put the toothpaste back in the tube.
That's the easiest part.
Yes, we can.
591-7200. And to Eric in Woodstock, good evening. You are on the air.
Hi. I have a question for President Truman.
By all means.
Eric, mm-hmm. could we possibly redirect it to another president?
is Truman a difficulty?
Yes, he's not in the repertoire. Yeah. Can we go from Johnson up to the current?
Give me
the question, and I'll figure out which president would best.
Well, I was just wondering what President Truman was thinking when he heard FDR had died.
Well,
I remember the actual quotation.
Oh, really?
Well, he writes it to his wife, who wasn't in the town at the time. I felt like a truck had landed on me, or a hay wagon had fallen on, haystack had fallen on me.
Wow.
Something like that.
I do know that I was at the Truman Library not too long ago in Independence, Missouri, and there was a neat display there that talked about it, and one of the cabinet meetings, maybe 2 months after Truman had become president, and he would had been listening for that entire 2 months to all the cabinet officials saying, well, President Roosevelt would have done this, or President Roosevelt wanted to do this, and Truman finally said, well, President Roosevelt's dead, I'm President Truman, and President Truman's going to do this. Give him hell, Harry.
All right, well, thank you.
Sorry, I couldn't do it as Harry.
Isn't that interesting that there are some people who just are not imitable? What makes you inimitable?
I think, actually, if you sound too common,
Yeah.
Which, as we've discussed before, is a problem with a lot of the actors in today's Hollywood. They all sound alike, really. And in the past, you had actors who...
It's harder to do Brad Pitt than to do James Cagney. Is that the case?
Yes, absolutely. You know, what's the difference between doing Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise? You know, they sound alike. But my theory on that is that the old actors really had a lot more stage experience and even radio experience.
Uh-huh.
And in order to be heard in the peanut gallery, for someone to distinguish between the various actors, you had to have a distinctive voice. That's true with radio.
Let me take you through a quick roster. Part of your sort of 30 and 5 series, meaning 30 and 5 minutes. I won't do all 30 of them, but let me just pick some of the actors on this list. W.C. Fields.
Gottfried Daniel. What an evening it is.
James Cagney.
You dirty, dirty rat.
Cary Grant.
Judy, Judy, Judy.
James Mason.
James Mason, who played the Desert Fox Field Marshal Rommel.
Basil Rathbone.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
Boris Karloff.
Boris Karloff, who not only played Frankenstein in the original Universal Picture, but who also provided the voice in the cartoon version of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Peter Lorre.
Peter Lorre. You don't even have to know who Peter Lorre was to appreciate his very unusual and distinctive voice and his rather, rather crazy laugh. Oh, I used to love those Bela Lugosi movies. Give us a little of your Bela Lugosi, please, Milt.
The bridge is off. You must stay. Deny it.
Oh, that was wonderful.
And Lytle Barrymore.
From It's a Wonderful Life. Remember, he was he played
Grandpa something.
Mr. Potter.
Oh, and in Wonderful Life, of course.
George, how would you like to be my vice president, George Bailey? Your ship has just arrived. If you're smart enough to climb on board.
And James Stewart's response was,
"Hey, this is me, Mr. Potter. Remember me, George Bailey of the Bailey Brothers Building and Loan? Well, Mr. Potter, I would say in the whole grand scheme of things, you're nothing but a scurvy little spider." Oh.
William Shatner as Captain Kirk.
Spock. Bones.
What a brilliant actor.
Well, what about Bones?
DeForest Kelly, who was Bones, Dr. McCoy.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a radio talk show host.
Now, you had Alfred Hitchcock on this list as well.
Good evening, and welcome to the Alfred Hitchcock. Ow.
And we will end with Jack Benny.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Jack Benny Show.
And welcome to the last batch of commercials coming up. And directly back to the phones and your quizzical questions for any president of comparatively recent vintage. 5917, though I'm still waiting for you to develop your Millard Fillmore.
Yes, but we could also have Barney Frank, you know, chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. He could be here. Or Al Gore, who actually got more votes than George Bush.
Yes.
Or any, you know, my friends, John McCain. You know, he's a lot of friends out there, my friends.
Yes, he does. I wonder if he's still friends with Sarah Palin.
Good question. I think everybody's his friend, my friend.
Yes. And here's another friend coming up. This is... Mark in Aurora, and you are on the air. Good evening.
Yes, I should like to have President, or rather King Johnson, reintroduced to perhaps dispel or confirm rumors that have been spoken of him. I'm deeply concerned that he engaged in tawdry behavior that we'd never see from the Queen. It is said that he would bring distinguished guests into his house only to insist that the meetings that he had with them be kept going by their accompaniment with him into, shall we say, the throne room. The Queen never would have engaged in such tawdry behavior. I should like to say that if it is true, sir, it was for your guests both odious and incommodious.
Well, I have to agree with you, but it did let them know who was king. And
Unlike the Queen, I did not bring my own seat, shall we say, with me when I traveled. She does bring her own seat, but she does not bring her guests into the throne room, which I, in fact, did. I also used to meet them when I had just stepped out of the shower, and that was a sight for some eyes, let me tell you. Thank you for your call.
We do.
It is absolutely true, though, from what I've heard. That
oh, yes.
Unbelievable.
It's famous, without going into the full detail of it.
Yes.
591-7200 as we go to Rich in LaForte, Indiana. Good evening.
Hey, Milt. How are you?
Just fine, sir. Go ahead.
I would like to compliment you and your producer on an absolute breath of fresh air show tonight. I mean, with all the problems and negativism that's going on in politics, poking a little fun at it is absolutely tremendous. So I appreciate
you
that
should,
very much.
You should neither thank me nor my producer, but you should thank Bill Melbourne.
I'm about to. I just, you first, and then him. No, I just had one question for President Obama. And
yes.
It was, I was curious, during those long pauses, what's actually going through your mind? You almost sound robotic, like you may have a bad chip and that you're hiccuping a bit. And I was just curious, is there something actually, are you trying to not misspeak, or is there something actually wrong inside the robotic system that's not allowing you to get the words out on a fluent basis? That was my question.
That's I like that bad chip. to answer your question, I am trying my best to think of the words to use without mispronouncing the words as my predecessor used to do. For example, I didn't want to say when I went to Ottawa yesterday in Canada, it is fantastical to be here in Canada. But by the way, can we mention my website for anyone that wants to hear some of the voices?
I think I will allow you to do that.
All right. Well, it's just www.anEveningWithThePresidents.com. So anEveningWithThePresidents.com.
And on that very site, they find what?
Well, there's an audio clips section where they can hear some of our presidents and parodies. There's a picture gallery where they can see me with you, Milt,
mm-hmm.
and also me with President Reagan and Mrs. Reagan, and a number of other interesting things on there. For example, the fact that President Reagan quoted me in one of his speeches.
Did he really?
He did. Which is a rather interesting twist, since I was impersonating him and quoting him, and
yeah.
he wound up quoting me once.
How?
I actually I had a friend at the White House who is was very close to the president, Mrs. Reagan, and is still very involved with the library, and so that's how I got to the White House on several occasions. And he took note that on one particular week I had letters to the editor in Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News, all three magazines in the same week. And they were all about free enterprise. And the president read those himself and quoted one of them.
I didn't know that.
And so that's one of the links on there.
Of course, I haven't stressed, I've only barely mentioned, the fact that you've got a very active writing career.
That's also, there's a link to one of my articles about aviation on the website.
Nor have I mentioned that you are officially a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Wore my uniform here, you might
you
recall.
You did one night, actually walk in very red.
I thought of that yesterday when the president was in Ottawa and he had the Mounties as his honor guard leaving Air Force One. But actually I was unable, the Mounties wanted me up to Halifax in the spring for an event, and I have another event the same night, so I'm sorry that I couldn't do that, because it's always a thrill to be at their regimental dinners with the Mounties all in their scarlet serges. A very impressive group.
Back to the phones, 591-7200, and next up is Alan in Hoffman Estates. Good evening.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Hello, Alan. How are
Alan
you?
Alan Iverson. Fine, Alan Iverson.
Oh, my gosh. Another Maine South alum.
Yes, I just want to say the last time I talked to you, you were on Milt's show. And I listened to it quite a bit, and it's the only times I've been on the radio. I wanted to...
No, well, are you still teaching?
No, I retired two years ago.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a question, Al.
Well, I just wanted to ask you, have you ever gotten in trouble doing your imitations where someone's taken it the wrong way? And remember, the statute of limitations have run out.
Well, yeah, I wonder about that statute of limitations running out. No, I've never gotten in trouble. I've occasionally worried about that. Yes. I might. But you might be referring back to some student pranks.
Yes, that we pulled
in younger years. And, fortunately, nothing ever came of those. But I did. It is amazing how people want to think that they're talking to the president.
Yes, it is. Hey, Bill, I got a question. Would you please give President Obama's troubles right now with quitting smoking? Would you please give a little, you know?
I thought that he had, in fact, already shaken the habit.
Maybe that's what he's thinking about during those pauses. I could really use a smoke right now. I'm glad at least he has one human fault. Al, good to hear from you.
And to Catherine in DeKalb. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, with President Reagan, what he might say about Sarah Palin. And also, if Mrs. Reagan has made any comments to him about Sarah Palin.
Well, all I can tell you is she's a wonderful governor. It's a wonderful state up there, Alaska, and she would have made a fine actress in Hollywood, a fine leading lady, fine first lady when it comes right down to that. But don't tell Nancy I said so. But of course, DeKalb is a beautiful part of Illinois up there. In northern Illinois, not all that far from Dixon, where I grew up.
That's true.
And what's the big thing going on there tonight in DeKalb?
Oh, they're having a...
Reagan Film Fest?
No, I think
Bedtime
it's a
for Bonds? Well, there's no better entertainment for college students out there than a Reagan Film Fest, Bedtime for Bonzo, Santa Fe Trail, Cattle Queen of Montana with Barbara Stanwyck and myself,
and the Newt Rockne film.
Well, that's
the Gipper film.
That is the greatest, of course.
Yeah.
Go out there and win one for the Gipper.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for calling from DeKalb.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll work in a last call to, I think, the current president, and this is Bruce in Racine, Wisconsin. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. I was hoping to talk to President Obama. I'd just like to ask him, how many people would be in the same problem with their homes if they were able to get a sweetheart deal like he did in Chicago?
Well, I think that is a question that is best left for another one of Milt's guests. Last night would have been a good one.
I see.
And we thank you, sir, for the call.
Day later, dollar short.
Good question, though.
And we are virtually out of time. It's a challenge every time a new president comes along for you, isn't it? How much time have you put in working up your Obama?
Well, actually, I really, obviously, last spring when it became obvious that he was going to be the nominee, I started working on him then. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll take me probably another year to really, really, I have to really feel like I'm him. And it took me a year or so to really feel like I was George W. or for any of these characters.
It's never just a matter of voice, obviously.
No. But the one thing, as I probably alluded to early in the program, that I noticed that his speaking style is very similar to Carl Sagan, the astronomer. And so I kind of started with Carl Sagan and took it from there.
By way of the elongation.
Elongation of the words, and then when you get those last words out, they're rapid fire.
Yes. Fascinating. So that's equivalent to the...
Yes, we can.
I was thinking of the George McGovern Liberace.
Oh, yes, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Out of time. Thanks so much, old friend, for joining us.